All right. So I hope that made some sense. It's a good start to the loving your neighbor as yourself thing. This, I believe, okay, well, this is the afterburn. I should say that at the beginning. So this is where we take questions, comments, etc., from you guys about the teaching. Look, this is the reason. Okay, I should say it differently. In my humble opinion, okay, this is the reason why the body hasn't grown at all in 2,000 years. We're just way more focused on the truth than the spirit. Okay? Not the way other churches talk about it. There are other messianic groups that talk about, well, we're way too into truth and not into spirit because they want it to be an emotional thing. I'm talking about the opposite of that. I'm saying we're more into the mechanics and not into the maturing and the growing. The spirit, the intrinsic nature, the fullness of the intent, not the emotional stuff. A lot of people say, well, it's not enough emotion. We're just all about do, 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 don't, don't. But yet, where's all the emotion? Well, our emotion's already out there causing us all kinds of problems. Problems we don't have our emotion under control. Be joyful in control. Love, be in control. Be frustrated, but in control. I mean, we have things that can be frustrating, but in control. Get over the negative emotions quickly. All right? All right, we're going to take questions and comments. Steve's going to go around with the mic here. Rob and Kurt have it on the live stream. Okay, Amy, go ahead and get us started.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Okay, so this is kind of a comment, and then you can tell me if it's in line with what you said. I really think that it is. So a couple of weeks ago, I went back to work after I was off for about a week and a half, and I was really frustrated with the way my job was done while I was gone, because in my estimation, it was just a big mess to try to sort out all this paperwork that, you know, was so, in my estimation, not filed correctly. And so I was extremely frustrated, right? And I was sharing this with one of the people here that we know each other very well. And I was telling her, I just didn't understand why couldn't they just file this right? You know, they're the one that gave me the job to do to begin with. So, they should know how to do it. They had it before I did. And so I was saying I just didn't, appreciate how I was thought of and et cetera, et cetera. So she said to me, well, you just kind of have to think about things a little differently. And I said, okay, I'm listening. And she said, she told me about a time in her life that was really hard and challenging, and how she was not being treated well by somebody that she was close to, and that no matter what she did, she still wasn't being treated well. So she changed her way of thinking from being self-focused, like you were saying, which is what I was doing, and changed it to asking the Father to help her know how she could serve that person. How can I be a servant to this person? And I said, oh, well, isn't that a novel idea? I never would have thought of that. So she said, told me that, and I said, I'm going to do that. So I was so excited, like, to change my way of thinking and to say to the Father, going to work the next day, or that day, because I called her on my way to work, and saying, all right, Father, what can I learn today when I go to work? I want to learn something. I want to learn how to be a better servant to my coworkers. Instead of being frustrated, help me be a better servant. And so I started doing that. This was a couple weeks ago. And so I'm so excited. Like every morning, I'm like, man, this is just revolutionary. And I know the honeymoon period's going to crash one of these days, but I'm still there. It's just been really great for me to go in with a better attitude, a better way to look at people. And after a few days of that, I thought to myself, wow, that could expand out even, to my mishpokah when I come here on Shabbat. To helps me be better aware, which is another thing that you were saying, right? To have that hyper awareness, I think you called it. So now I find I'm paying more attention, like wherever I'm at, whether it's going to get groceries or at that gas station or here or at work or wherever,
right.
How can I be a better servant wherever I am? So is that kind of what you were saying?
Yes, it was. Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Good job. Okay. So, look, anytime you find yourself in a undesirable, negative, we'll call it negative, but undesirable emotional place. That first thought should be, this is my problem, not their problem. Okay? You can't control them. And you may not know why they did it. Maybe there was a reason. Maybe they just were so overwhelmed and busy they couldn't put it where it was supposed to go, weren't thinking, and they were just, you know, handling some other thing. And you don't know what they were going through. All you think about is, oh, they are now inconveniencing me. So, or you could go, oh, this is inconvenient. Wow, I'm having a negative thought. Abba allowed this so I can deal with that. Because if you cannot, okay, let me rephrase that. Can we agree that Yahweh is always in a state of shalom? Okay? The above is always maintaining shalom. So when you're having a moment where your shalom is disappearing or gone, that's something he wants you to learn how to bring back into shalom, into peace. So when you show up at work and something disturbs your shalom, it was for you that he allowed it to happen. Why are you mad at them? You're the one with the problem. What? I'm not the one who doesn't know how to file things. But he allowed them to file it badly so that you can deal with your problem, with your frustration. This is one of those challenges. Like, I've had to counsel people on a regular enough basis when they have problems with their jobs, where sometimes they forget that, you know, you're getting paid for the hour. Why do you care what you're doing? I'll have to refile the papers for the same hour you're getting paid for if you're not filing the papers. What's the difference? You're trading your time to do whatever it is that needs to be done during that time, whether you're sweeping the floor, vacuuming, or filing papers, or selling cars, or whatever you're doing, surgery, or it doesn't matter. You're trading time. What do you care? You're getting paid, okay? And so sometimes it's going to go very smoothly. Sometimes you have nothing to do, and you're really getting paid for doing nothing. And sometimes you're going to do more than you really want to do because somebody made your job harder for a few seconds, okay? But next time it happens, realize if it's your wife, if it's your husband, if it's your children, if it's your parents, whoever it is that's making you, here we go again, right, making you feel, why do they have to do that? Well, wait. Your peace has disappeared. Well, you're stealing my peace. Can't be done. I can't steal your peace. You lost your peace. I could do anything to you and you can still maintain your peace. Doesn't matter what I do. Maybe the only thing that's hard to do is I'm tickling you. It's hard to maintain your peace because then somebody's physically really doing something to you like that. But I mean, generally speaking, someone does something, they can't steal your peace. You could choose to have that peace no matter what. I know that's challenging and hard and almost impossible to do, but that's what we have to do. Okay? And so when you had your situation at work, you had someone that actually straightened you out and gave you some thoughts that would get you back to a place of peace. But now you know that when you're dealing with this kind of stuff, the idea is to think, oh, wait, my peace is disappearing or gone or being challenged. This is my problem, not theirs. But without them doing it, I wouldn't have the problem. No, the problem was always there. This is now exposing the problem. Okay? And now you're aware of the problem still being there. Well, if they had just done what they did and you didn't have the problem, you'd still have peace. So praise Yah, he re-triggered it. Look, one of these days I'm going to let go of my frustration with technology and finally have peace. Don't laugh at me like that. They're laughing like, yeah, Rabbi, whatever. No, it's true. I mean, I should just sit there going, okay, happened again, logged in, typed the password incorrectly, still doesn't want to let me in. You know. But have peace. If your peace is gone, it's not the other person's fault. You make me so mad. No, I don't. I do things that you choose to respond by getting so mad. You're just so rude. You're just so obnoxious. You're such a jerk. You're such a this. And you still have a choice how you react. I may be all of those things at that moment. But so what? That doesn't change your freedom of choice. Okay? Now, you can in peace communicate, I don't prefer to be treated that way. But you do that with peace. I'm not telling you to have to just take it. What I'm telling you is you have to find a way not to be reactive in the negative emotional space and then try to work it out with the other person so that whatever's happening stops. Okay? But you can do that differently when you're triggered versus when you're in peace. All right? When you're in peace, it's a completely different way of dealing with it. When you're triggered, you're just going to be throwing gas on the fire. They're throwing more gas on your fire. The thing is blowing bigger and exploding. And instead of stepping on landmines, you're throwing them at each other, you know? All right? And so I'm not saying just be a doormat. If the person really is doing things that you would rather them not do, fine, communicate that. But don't communicate it from an emotional place of anger, hurt, pain, suffering, you know, whatever, offense, whatever it is. Find a way to respond and say, I realize that you're in a lot of pain. I realize you're upset. I'm sorry that you're upset. I don't really maybe understand why you're upset. But, you know, the way you're talking to me right now, I don't really prefer that. So let's see if we can find a way to communicate this differently. But you're doing it from a peace. See, did you notice that Amy's voice changed when she was talking about what happened? Well, if they just put it in the right place, I mean, they're the ones who showed me how to do it in the first place. And see, it's still there. I mean, I don't understand. Okay? That all has to be released. It's toxic to your body. Okay, negative thoughts, negative emotions are actually physically toxic to your body. Okay, Amy?
Well, that's a good lead into what I was going to say because, you know, I was excited to learn I really had to change my mindset. And then part of my own personal development is, working on my character. So I'm reading some different books to also help me with that. And they were talking about how you could envision your mind as a garden. And, you know, so to get this picture in your mind. And so when I did that, I related it to health, right, and nutrition. And I thought, oh, well, I want to do as much as possible not to take in any toxicity and then make sure my deficiencies are decreased. So I equated that to my mind. So that's how I started thinking about it too. When I go, you know, say work is a good example. I go in and I think, you know, I ask Yahweh to show me how can I be a good servant to my coworkers. And so now I'm paying attention. I have that better awareness and I can realize it helps me respond. You know what I mean?
Yep.
When I'm paying attention instead of reacting, which is exactly what I did, in the first place, now I can respond and I can realize if what I would call a toxic thought is coming in and I say, oh, you know, I don't want to accept that into my mind. You know, that's not coming in this garden, right? And so I must be deficient in something that Yahweh wants me to have. And so I take the time to replace that, if you will.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay, so just to kind of close up on what Amy was talking about, that was one idea, one technique. What you want to do is go out there and find as many as necessary till you find the one that works for you. Because hers may not work for you. It works for her, okay? You know, I find that on a daily basis, I'm watching or listening to or reading something that has to do with understanding why we do what we do. Why we behave the way we do, why we struggle with what we deal with. I'm always listening, reading, doing something with that. You know, we went to school to learn history and science and math and English and all these kind of things. School didn't give us the how do we understand us. And by the way, your Bible doesn't answer all of that either, okay? It hints at it. It gives you a little, you know, stuff. But there's no real, like, chapter to understand why we're so screwed up. Emotionally, it's an emotional thing. Why our thinking processes connected to our emotions are always so challenged. Now, it does say things like, well, let his mind be in you, and then that'll work. But, okay, but how do you do that? how do I stop thinking like me and start thinking like him? And I get phone calls like that all the time. Rabbi, I'm having a problem. I don't know how to do this. And you're going to have to look in and go find the personal development guys out there and ladies out there that do a great job of teaching, understanding how our brains and our minds and our emotions and thoughts work. And when they don't work, how come and the reasons why they don't work. Okay, there are really, really good teachers out there, tons of them. Okay, and you can find them. Most of them have stuff you can find on YouTube or wherever free. And if not, spend the money. Okay, some of the things I'm teaching you is because I spent a bunch of money in the last 40 years studying this stuff. I've been to live seminars. I've owned the, you know, whatever system of, like, you know, programs that they were selling. These guys would sell a whole program, what they had. Watched YouTubes, read books, I mean, listened to audios, whatever it is, for years and years. Spent a lot of money. Some of it was worthwhile, some of it was less worthwhile, but you know what? I will tell you, when I spend money on any of these things, I'm looking for, if I could find just one thought, distinction, insight that changes any aspect of what I'm struggling with, it's priceless. Oh, but I spent $300 on this video system, blah, blah, blah. I said, did you get at least one idea? Yes, but it was worth it. Did you get two? Wow, you got bonus. You got 5, 6, 8, 10 of them? It was like cheap. Just spent a couple $100 for 5, 10, 8, you know, whatever it is, you know, ideas. I mean, if I'm looking for stuff, I'm just looking for that one little nugget or two or three that I can now apply. It's like I tell you when we read, this is my approach when on Tuesday nights we're reading the Torah portion. Look for that piece or that nugget you can get out of the Torah portion that you can add into your walk right now that's going to make a difference. Something that you're either going to stop doing or start doing or do more consistently or whatever it is. Think differently, feel differently. But you need to be a student, okay? Tony Robbins had a phrase he used to use into the 80s called CANI, which is C-A-N-I, which means constant and never-ending improvement as a mindset. That was one of the things that he used to promote. It's a great mindset. I mean, I love the phraseology, the idea of constant and never-ending improvement. But that also requires constant and never-ending education. You have to keep being a student of life. Well, I study the Bible. Good. What else are you studying? Nothing. Are you studying whatever it is your emotional challenges? Frustration, overconnected, underconnected, boundaries, anxiety, PTSD. Why are you not studying the things you struggle with? I've told you before, you need to become an expert in your struggle. You need to know everything about your struggle. If you all of a sudden found out that you were coming down with a, you know, some sort of a thing like, I don't know, like a Parkinson's or something, before it fully kicked in, I would study it and be an expert at it if I found out I was getting something, or Hodgkin's or anything. Whatever it is that's coming, I want to know everything about it. How can I maximize my ability to function with it? Okay? So you find out that you have anxiety problems, insecurity problems, frustration problems, anger problems, whatever it is, become an expert. How do people handle it? Because like Amy, you'll find a technique that helps. Now, the technique she was given might have been useless to her. Because I've had people give me techniques, I'm like, okay, that doesn't really connect in my head. I don't understand the technique, and I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Other techniques, right away, you hear it, boom. You embrace it, it makes sense, you use it, like it did for her. All right? That's why I'm saying what I'm saying, because some of you may think, well, I don't know about thinking about a garden and what? Okay? But it works for her and a percentage of the people. But because it doesn't work for everybody, go out there and hear. You know what? I remember we had a motivational guy coming into town when I was working in the commodities business, and he was going to teach personal development and sales and that kind of stuff. And I asked one of the guys, are you going? He says, nah. He says, I'm sure he's not going to teach anything I haven't already heard. I said, I certainly hope not. I hope he's not going to teach you anything that isn't already existing, because there isn't anything new out there. I hope he's going to teach you stuff you already should know, but you're not doing. And things you're doing that you should stop doing. Kind of like when Peter says, I know you're already established in this present truth, but it's my job to keep reminding you about it. I've heard enough stuff right now that I'm not likely to hear anybody say anything new in the personal development arena. But they may put it in a way that I'm like, ooh, That's good. That works for me. Or, ooh, I know some people that might work for them where other things I've tried didn't work. But I'm not necessarily sitting there going, wow, I've never heard that before. Now, in the beginning, I did. In the beginning, I had a lot of those aha moments. But after listening to 10 or 12 or 15 of these guys, they're all saying basically the same stuff. They're just packaging it in a uniquely their own way. I'm doing the same thing. I'm taking all this stuff. And some of you are thinking, well, that sounds a little bit like Tony Robbins. No, a little bit like Les Brown, a little bit like Jim Rohn, or a little bit like, you know, Brian Tracy, or a little bit like, and I keep going on and on with all the guys I've heard. A little bit like Zig Ziglar, a little bit like, and you're right, it is a little bit like all of them. But I'm putting my own unique way of packaging it in the delivery of it. It's really the same stuff. Okay? So when I go to hear any of these guys speak, I'm expecting them to say everything I already know, but repackage it in a way that might finally get me to do it. Really is the point. Okay? Now that's why sometimes you'll be saying something to somebody and they're ignoring you completely. Then somebody else says the exact same thing, but a different way of saying it, and they listen and you're like, and they'll come to you say, and they'll come to you and tell you about it, and you're like, I've been telling you that for 3 years. And they're looking at you like, what? But the other person, you guys know what I'm talking about. It's because of the delivery, the way it was packaged, the different slight angle of the metaphors that were used or the examples that were used or the way of packaging it together made all the difference for that person. You know, sometimes you need a screwdriver, sometimes you need a hammer, sometimes you need a pliers. You know, when you're in the toolbox, there's a lot of different tools in the box. You don't just have one tool in the box and it's good for everything. Okay? You want a hammer and a nail, fine. You got a nail, you can hammer it in. If you got a screw that you want to unscrew, the hammer's not going to help you at all. Okay? Try unscrewing a nail, though. Okay? You have to have the right tool. All right? And so, guess what? Not everybody has all the same tools in their toolbox. So you're going to have to go ahead, you know. Some of you are remembering the little InFocus I talked about getting hammered and the screwdrivers. Okay, never mind. Okay, go look that up as an InFocus. All right, so, because Mark's over there laughing his head off. All right, anyway, next one.
All right, for me, I think when you said about love your neighbor as yourself, I think we need to each come in to learn where we love ourselves too much, that we're not willing to listen to when we need to, and where we don't love ourselves enough, that's why we end up hurting ourselves and hurting others. And then we need to also identify the areas which we have prerequisites before we can show compassion. Because if I don't like the way this guy looks, I might not have the compassion I need to. Or because she said something that upset me, I'm going to walk past her need too. So that's an important thing. Maybe yep. You could help.
Yeah. Some of you know this feeling. You're already having a problem with somebody. You have negative feelings or negative thoughts. And then you find out that something happened to them and you're thinking, huh, couldn't have happened to a better guy. Like, serves him right. Right? Those kind of moments, good for him. You know, that's wrong. That is a wrong thought process, a wrong emotion. You know. But you're all thinking, good. You got what you deserved. Who are you to decide what they deserved? We're all guilty of this. But it's a problem. Who's next? Janet?
Rabbi, thank you. It's the last verse of Matthew 5, when it says, therefore be perfect as your Father in the heavens is perfect. I so much appreciate your teaching on that, because that was actually the verse that I, when I was in the church, that was the one that I always tried to get an answer about. What does it say here, be perfect? Does it mean that I can be perfect? Nobody would be able to answer that for me, so I appreciate so much what you share. And also about what you said about setting boundaries and not being a doormat, that was my question to you. But in the many wrong teachings that I had when I was in the church, one of the things that I remember, especially with the Catholic people, they would say that you have to pretty much give everything to the poor, right? And just, which is really, I think, not what Torah is really saying, correct?
Right. And we're going to break this down a whole lot more, too, as to how we treat who and what's expected of each thing. That's why I said, look, the person who took care of the person that was robbed just bound the wounds and took them someplace where they can then move on from there. They didn't now like own a relationship with them forever. There's different levels of obligation and responsibility. This is sort of that minimum level of, hey, bind the wounds, make sure they're okay, take them someplace safe, make sure they have what they need to get them back on their feet type of thing, you know? Okay?
And then when you were talking about how we need to really embrace his nature, you know, and really operate from the above, I was thinking about Psalms 103 when he says, for he knows how we're made, he remembers that we're dust. And so if we're able to operate from his eyes, the way he sees things, we really are, should be, if we know Torah, able to, you know, shower people who are not nice to us with compassion like he does, because he says he reigns for everybody, right? So I think that that's going to be kind of my mantra, you know, like to help me stay in tune with that. And the last piece is when you were talking about hypervigilance, thinking that it can go wrong with either way, negative or positive, positive or negative emotions. Like sometimes I tend to want to say yes to somebody, perhaps to help, but sometimes I may, in my eagerness, may not stop to maybe consider what my husband says if it involves my family, right? So it's important to have that balance for either one. Thank you, Rabbi.
You're welcome. Next.
I had one more question. Can you, in your things as they come, can you teach us maybe how love can become a choice rather than us connecting it to an emotion?
No, love isn't a choice. Love is something you have to do. Your choice is how you express it or whether you express it. Okay? So that's the problem, is that people think love is, that's a good point that you made then. It gave me a chance. Love is not the choice. Whether or not to express it, whether or not you, how you deal with it, how you feel it or not. If you're going to love those loving you and love your enemies, so apparently love is not a choice. You love everybody. Okay? Even when Abba throws those who end up finally in the lake of fire, that's still going to be love. And so correction can be love. Compassion can be love. Mercy can be love. But love is not the issue. How it's expressed is the problem. Okay? Shannon?
This is only a comment, but I just wanted to thank you again, because you know, you were talking about being kind to people, but also we struggle to even be kind to ourselves. And I know you, like before on one of our counseling sessions, you recommended that I practice more positive self-talk, because I didn't realize how badly I would talk to myself, because I'm always critical. Always critical of myself, and I've noticed how it has affected how I've been seeing things and seeing people, because it's like, it's a filter. I'm still breaking through, but I've been applying the positive self-talk more, and it's been helping me. I just wanted to thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, and eventually for things like this, I don't know if we're going to put together a site where I can recommend some things. There's a guy named Shad Hemstetter, who has a book on what to say when you talk to yourself and a lot of other self-talk stuff, and has a self-talk website. It's a subscription site if you want to subscribe to some of his things. But, you know, he's one of those people that talks about self-talk. Okay, that's his area. All right. Who's next? Okay, live stream.
All right, from Anna Zimmerman, says, I know every situation carries, but how do you discern helping your neighbor to a certain point and not overstepping that line, like with the example of the Samaritan given the basic needs?
Yeah, look, these are the kinds of things that ideally you would lean on the structure. You know, there's a situation happening. Now, clearly, if there's an emergency, and there's an urgency, you could help with that urgency. Well, how far do you take it is the question. Well, you bring in the leadership for counsel. The leadership may already have experience, whatever it is you're facing, that the person is dealing with that you're trying to help. Leadership might already know a lot about that person and their situation, and know more than you might know to be able to help you know how far to go or how where to limit how much you help. Okay? And so, you know, we had a problem, and of course, people don't like the correction. We had a lady, this is many years ago, that was posting on our Facebook group, you know, all kinds of very strong hints about, oh, I can't pay my bill for this and I can't pay that. She wasn't actually outright asking for money, but she was asking for money. Now, this is a person who was already talking to me, already we had sent some financial help for, already knew where the limits were of what we should help and what was being entitling and enabling the person with their problems. Told her not to go do this, and when she did it, took the post down and corrected her, and she got all angry and now was out there as one of the enemies, quote unquote, who's attacking me out there for years now, okay? I said, if you need help, call us. We'll take care of that. All the people out there don't know you, don't know what we're doing to help you, don't understand where you're coming from, and don't know that there is a point where you're now going to be sitting back and being enabled. And we don't want to enable you. We want to help you. If my helping enables you, that's not help. All right? So all of you need to be careful. This is, I'm thinking, very common, okay? It seems like Abba tends to call and draw people who have big hearts. Okay? We're very compassionate. We have big hearts. Our problem is that makes us easy targets for enabling people, for being taken advantage of, and that kind of thing. So the best thing to do is to contact the structure, talk to the leadership people around you, and get guidance so that you're not taken for a ride or enabling somebody, becoming codependent with them or whatever problem that you may be doing. All right? Very important that you do that. That doesn't mean that the ministry doesn't get taken advantage of, but better it should be us than you. Because you will get offended and angry when you find out you were taken advantage of. We'll handle it a little differently, all right? We do this as our part of our job. You're doing it as something that came up as an opportunity. We do this all the time. It's a little bit different, all right? So hopefully that helps. Okay, next question or comment?
Okay, from Anna Uden. It says, question, if we are to love people as we love ourselves, then should we worry about what our actions might make them think?
All right. So, and I was also thinking about what Anna had said earlier, too, that Zimmerman was talking about. Okay, so let me just finish with one more thing. Just also understand that everybody thinks their situation's an emergency. Everybody's situation to them is an emergency. And you may not have the discernment to understand that you're being caught in the, you know, emotional trap that they're using to get what they want when it really isn't an emergency. Okay, now to the second point, the second thing that you just brought up, you know, say that one more time. This is the other.
From Anna Uden. Says, yeah. If we are to love people as we love ourselves, then should we worry about what our actions might make them think?
All right, so we have back-to-back Anna questions from two different Annas. Okay. I want to answer this carefully. Okay, on one hand, your actions, the things that you're going to do in terms of your response to people, they should be because it's right. And if it's right, you should not care about their thought or how they're going to react. You're doing it because it's right. Now, I'm being careful because I don't want you to be completely disconnected from the fact that they will have thoughts and they may be offended, they may overreact, they may underreact, they may inappropriately react. So try your best always to be sensitive to the potential reaction, but don't do or not do because you're worried about the reaction. Do the right thing because it's right, not because of how they're going to react. I'll give you an example. I've used this before, and you know, and I'm not picking on anybody, you know, in particular here, but I mean, I had a problem at work many years ago. And the guy made me lose my temper. No, he didn't. And so I went the next day and apologized. Now, in my opinion, he was over the top wrong about whatever it was. I don't remember it. I don't know what it was. But whatever it was, I was convinced he was wrong. And so, but I wanted to apologize that whether I thought he was right or wrong, I should not have allowed it to cause me to lose my temper. You see? Now, I didn't care how he reacted to that. To me, it was right for me to own my part. It may have re-triggered the argument. It may have re-triggered the fight. It may have been like, well, it's fine that you're sorry about that, but what about that? It could have triggered anything. I knew I needed to own my part. Okay? This is actually a good learning experience for my wife, because she looked at me like, why are you going to bother to do that? The fight was, because I'm wrong. Okay, and I want her to know, I'm going to do this, because you remember that when I did that? Okay? I don't know if I was wrong about the rest of it. I'm just saying I knew I was wrong about this part. And so I was at least going to own that. Now, while you're doing that, others around you might be looking at you like, why? That other person did this to you, and they did that to you, and they embarrassed you, and did all these other things? Yes, but I allowed my temper to trigger. See, I recognized that he did not make me do that. I allowed the reaction and response to what he did. I chose to pop my cork by not creating enough space to realize I could act differently. Okay, that's something that's important that you can learn from. So yes, that's a great question. You do what you do because it's right, and you try to do it in a way that causes the least amount of reaction that you don't want to have as a bad reaction. But even if it's going to get a reaction, you still do it because it's right. Okay? But you make the choice based on whether or not it's right. And not just right, but necessary. Okay? You come to realize you did some things to somebody 15 years ago. Don't restir that up and go apologize now necessarily to somebody you haven't talked to in 15 years. Unless you're wanting to restart a relationship and then you're trying to do that. But don't just go like, what was that show where the guy had a list of all the people he messed up? That comedy show? Anybody remember that show? Stephen, what was that show? The show where the guy, like, you know, Earl, right. My name is Earl, is that it? All right, so this is a dumb show, but in that show, this guy realized he had all these people in his life he'd done wrong in some way, and he's like trying to track them all down. Half the people didn't even remember who he was, okay? So don't stir things up just to stir things up, but if you're in a moment and it actually happened and it's fresh and new and recent, you know, own what you did. Even if you think the other person was still wrong, at least say, I want to apologize for, whether I think you were right or wrong, I want to apologize that I shouldn't have lost my temper. I shouldn't have screamed at you or yelled at you or whatever you did. Okay? All right? And so I just want to make sure that you're not thinking, well, do I need to have to go back now to this thing that happened? No, you don't have to go back and open up wounds. If you have a friendship with somebody, they already long forgot about the thing, then leave it buried. It's fine. They left it alone. You left it alone. Move on. Don't stir up things that don't need to be stirred up. But stuff that's actually happening now, do the right thing because it's the right thing. Okay? Thank you. All right, next.
Okay, from M2I Philippines, Jet Singh. Why is it hard to love one another, but there are some can do it easily? Is this by choice?
The only difference I think that people have in how hard it is or how easy it is for them to love people, it has to do with how they get affected by what people do. If they are less affected, in other words, there's less self, there's less personal receiving, they can handle it a lot better and they tend to love people a lot more easily. If they tend to take things personally, it's much harder. And so really it has to do with that capacity that you have. How much of this is you with your feelings out there to be stepped on? Because you can ask Billy, you can ask other people on the staff. He sees me all the time with people. He's thinking, man, Rabbi, your ability to, you know, have things done in your face and everything else, because my feelings generally are not out there to get stepped on. I'm not saying I've reached the level that we're talking about here in the book, but I mean, on a lot of conversations, a lot of levels, I'm able to exhibit that because I don't have the feelings out there to be stepped on. No, I'm not perfect with that. Somehow logging into a computer has feelings stepped on. I don't know why. No, it's not a feelings thing, it's a progress thing. But understand that that's the problem. If you are a person who has sensitivities to being offended, to be insecure, so that you're afraid somebody's going to treat you in a way that's, you know, makes you feel unsafe or insecure, all those things are the landmines that are out there in the minefield. The people that you're describing, Jet, just don't have as much of a minefield. So they can handle things much more easily. Okay? All right. Next.
Okay, from Donna Bannister. Says, can you elaborate on Matthew 5:38 and where it originally appears in Exodus 21:24? This scripture is used many times to try and prove Messiah taught differently than the Old Testament.
No, look, the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth thing as mentioned in Leviticus and Deuteronomy and other places in the Old Testament has to do with equal justice, equal, like the punishment equals the crime type of thing, okay? Okay, so the person, you know, scratched your car when they drove by, it's different than if they basically totaled it, you know what I'm saying? So something that's of balance, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, measure for measure and those kind of things. It was about judgment. Here it's about people and how you interact. We're not talking about going to court here. We're not talking about equal punishments and weight and all that kind of stuff. We're talking about, hey, look, you hear it, it talks about eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, and I'm telling you, you need to be more patient for that. You're not trying to meet out that justice immediately yourself. If you have a problem that needs eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, you go to the judge. If you're not going to go to the judge, turn the other cheek. Let it go. This is talking about two completely different things. Yeshua is not talking in a contrast or in against or in conflict, I mean, with what was said in the Old Testament. The Old Testament was talking about how the judges were to judge. All right? Yeshua is talking about how we interact with each other when we're not going to the judge. Because if something was done to you that needed to go to a judge, the judge would decide this. So this isn't saying now all of a sudden now you just got to suck it up and just take it. It's saying the stuff that you're not going to go to the judge for anyway, this is the better way to handle it. Otherwise, you're just going to be miserable and angry and bitter and all the other stuff, and your things are just going to... That spreads like a disease through the camp, that negative emotional place. All right, next.
From back to our roots, what are some tools to help be safe or help to be self-aware? How are we treating our neighbors and enemies when one is stuck in their own way?
Look, it's back to the beginning of what I said. The first thing you have to do is work on you. You got to figure you out. Why you struggle? Where do you struggle? Are you even aware that you're struggling? Or are you just blissfully going through life, driving everybody around you crazy, and you have no idea that you're doing any of that stuff? Okay? Or that you react. Get somebody to be honest with you and say, you do have a challenge with anger. You do have a challenge with anxiety. You have a challenge with trouble with trust. You have a trouble with fear. You have whatever it is. Get to figure yourself out. That's why we do the personalities. I'll take the color code, and then with the color code, understand yourself better. Okay, it's a free test. It's only going to tell you your one main color, but you know you can pay. You know what? If you're not worth spending $50 to get the whole thing and everything, well then, I mean, you're not going to invest in yourself something. Buy the book. Take the test that's in the book. Get all your percentages. Figure out. And don't do the color code. Do Myers-Briggs. Do anyone you want. I mean, you may feel better knowing that instead of being yellow or blue or red, that you're an ENTP or whatever you are. Okay? I think it's tougher to remember what any of those letters stand for, but that's fine. All right? But figure yourself out. Get to know what makes you tick. All you want to focus on is what makes them. Why do they behave the way they do? Figure yourself out first. Okay? Put the mask. I always talk about the airplane model, right? Put the oxygen mask on yourself first. You got to figure you out before you worry about figuring somebody else out. You know, I had a person one time I was counseling, and the whole time, the beginning was she was just ranting about somebody else and what they did and everything else and blah, blah, blah. And when she was finally done, I said, okay, that was all well and good. I said, but what did you do? What do you mean, what did I do? I said, well, this didn't all happen to all them. I didn't hear one word about what you did. Me? What do you mean, what I do? I said, you have no relationship now with your daughter. Why? Well, because blah, blah, blah. No. You did something. At least she perceived you to do something. So how come I'm only hearing about her? You having a problem with your wife? You having a problem with your husband? You're having a problem with your children? Make sure you figure you out first. Okay? Somehow you got to figure out you first. All right? All right, next question.
Okay, from Johnny. Says, Rabbi, does this mean if I'm walking by the way and I see some people that in my eyes look like bad people and feel there's a possibility that harm could come to me, do I go around them or by them? Would that make me not loving because I judge them on how they look?
Okay. You know, I want to say two things. First of all, I appreciate the question. The person's struggling with this whole thing. But all of you at times have the same struggle. First, why don't we just pay attention to what this thing was talking about? All right? Then let's not try to find other extremes, but be careful with that. Just because people like to swing the pendulum to the extremes. This is talking about a person who is clearly beat up and down. There's no danger to you to go approach this person who is half dead and bleeding. So this isn't talking about anything this person was asking the question. I'm going to answer the question, but this is not talking about that. Okay? Loving an enemy doesn't mean go over there and get yourself killed by your enemy. He says pray for your enemy. If you can, do good for your enemy. You can do that indirectly. So what's going on here? You have a requirement in Scripture to use judgment and discernment. Not to judge. If I see somebody coming down the street and I believe in my discernment, they're not safe for me. That's judgment and discernment, and I may decide to walk around so that I am safe. Now, if I'm going to think of them as evil sinners who are doomed to burn and all this other stuff, now I'm judging them. If I look down on them, I'm judging them. If I think I'm better than them, I'm judging them. Discernment or judgment says, I don't think that's safe. I'm just going to go over here. I don't know what their issue is. I don't know what's going on over there. But for this part of where they are in their walk, in their life, I feel safer over here than over there. That doesn't mean I'm not loving them. I can pray for them from over here. I can ask Abba to help them on their journey from over here. You understand what I'm saying? Okay? But let's be careful when we read something. First, focus on what it is saying. We're talking about someone that genuinely needs help. Now, bear in mind, there are scammers out there that will act like they've been in an accident, get you to come over, and the next thing you know, you're in trouble. So we're not talking about doing that either. It's a metaphor for, in general, you know that this person really is actually hurt. And we're not even talking about going and taking care of somebody literally in this situation. Just, somebody is in need. Everybody's ignoring their need, and you have the capacity in a safe way to meet their need, then do it. Or get people involved that can do it. Maybe you can't do it, so you call me, you call the leadership here, and we can do it. Stay safe, though. So that part's a good part of the question. I like the person's question. I just want to use it as a, just be careful that we don't take extremes out of something that it doesn't say. All right? You're not obligated that you see a car accident to pull over and try to help that person. It may not be safe for you to do that. You also can put yourself at risk that if you don't know what you're doing and something worse happens to that person, you're now at risk. However, you certainly could call 911 if 911 isn't already there. Okay? So you can call for help instead of just ignoring it. All right? Recognize your limited capacity. Which, you know, this person, the Samaritan, understood he could do something. Maybe the Levite or the priest was not capable of binding the wounds or didn't know what else to do. They could have at least gone over and said, I'm going to get help and do something. They walked around and said, I don't want to have nothing to do with this. Do what you can and do it safely. Because yes, there will be people that look like they had an accident only to do, you know, to carjack you or do whatever, they rob you or some other thing. This was not the case here on a road where clearly this person was laying there, his clothes messed up, his body messed up, injuries all over. This person was, quote, unquote, half dead. By himself, not moving, not likely to be moving, had to be put on this man's donkey or horse or whatever he had, you know, his beast, and taken. Couldn't even move, couldn't walk. If you're not sure if that's the case, you can talk to the person from a distance. You can approach them from a distance. Ask them if they're okay. Ask them if they need something. Judge, using judgment, right? Judge the situation, not the person. Use judgment for the situation and whether or not it's safe. Okay, next.
Okay, from Dutchman says, should we be more intentional in our dialogues and how do we do that?
You should be more intentional in everything, okay? And so what's intentional? All right, you should have clear in your mind what your outcome is so that you can intentionally do things to get to the outcome. You should, if you could do this, almost everything you do will be much more productive and beneficial and go better. When you make a phone call, have in mind what you're looking to accomplish on the phone call. If you're going to meet with somebody, have in mind what you're hoping to accomplish when you meet with them. If you're spending time with somebody, have in mind, focus your attention on the intention. Focus the intention. Look, if your plan is to relax, then relax. So when I go to, you know, do something that's leisure, I don't want to think about work. I don't want to think about anything. I'm just going to enjoy myself. That's my intention, to enjoy myself or to have fun or to whatever. See, I tell people, this is a very important thing that we got to give you an example. When we've gone on cruises, I love going on a boat, but I love going on a boat because I have an intention. And I need, and I always communicate my intention because that way nobody can mess it up, or at least I'll try not to, which my intention is to do nothing. Your intention may be to do everything. That's how you're going to have fun. Your intention may be to get off at every stop the boat makes and go see all the things you can see. And that's not a problem. I mean, but I want to make it clear to the people with me, I'm not doing any of that stuff. Just because my intention to get the relaxing, whatever I needed to go on the boat for, is going to require being left alone. Okay? Now, if I don't communicate that intention, I could get frustrated. It's happened in the past because I didn't communicate it. You know? And so people would be with us. We've taken staff members on these things. Like we've had the staff go out and to have a cruise together just to kind of, you know, unwind together. And I've had to tell everybody, I'm doing nothing. And they look at me like, yeah, they don't. Then they get on the boat and they realize I was telling the truth. I said, don't ask me to do anything. I may do a few things because I choose to do them, but don't ask me to do anything. But see, that's an intention, right? Now, when you get married, you have the same problem. You have in your mind what you picture. It's basically like an expectation. And so you have in your mind how you're going to be, and you have an expectation of them. But if you don't have that every moment, okay, to be clear on outcome, all right? And then you act shocked when you get an outcome that was not desired. Well, you weren't clear on the outcome, so you didn't do things to bring about the outcome. But if you go into everything clear, okay, your child needs you, you don't want to be with the child, you're doing something, you're in the middle of something. So you go over there and you give a half effort, you frustrate yourself, you frustrate the child, because all you're thinking about is, my whole thing was, I don't want to be here, I want to just get it over with, I want that child to know that they interfered with my stuff. That's not going to go well. Or I can recognize, child needs me, I'm doing this stuff right now, but if I'm going to stop this, I'm going to change my full focus and intention to go over there and give them the attention they need and get the thing done. It's going to go much better, much faster. Because now I'm in that place. I'm in that moment. When I talk to you, if I can look you in the eye and focus on you, it's going to be a lot better than if I'm looking around you and thinking about all the... And you know I'm thinking about trying to get somewhere else. I really don't want to be there with you. That's not going to go well. But if you go with an intention... Look, I apologize to Uncle Bob in advance. No. Because years ago, I had a bunch of guys all mad at me because I told them about something I was doing with my wife, and they said, don't let our wives find out about this. You're going to get us in trouble. I don't like to do many of the things my wife likes to do. We have very different ideas about leisure time or where to go. And so that doesn't work really well for the two of us. But I wanted to do things, and I wanted her to be happy. So when we first got married, I invented a thing called Honey Bunny Day. That was our little nickname, Honey Bun, right? So, and what that meant was my mindset wasn't about enjoying what we were doing. My mindset was she enjoying what we were doing? My intention was to see her happy, right? So I did all kinds of things that I normally would not really enjoy. Not that they weren't enjoyable, I just wouldn't enjoy them, okay? But yet I had a great time because my intention had nothing to do with what we were doing. She got to pick, and the whole day was me monitoring her face. Was she happy? I spent a whole day walking around a mall. That was could have been torture. May have thought about filing charges. But because I had the intention, I actually enjoyed the whole day. And we've gone to places that were like touristy towns and walked around and whatever she wanted to do. But I was doing it for a whole different mindset. My intention was different. It wasn't the intention of us having a great time, both doing something we both like to do. I decided to just focus on her having a great time. And then I actually had a great time because I was happy that she was happy. I mean, that was the whole purpose. In other words, the outcome I was looking for. So I looked at things totally differently. Things that normally would be like, are we almost done? When are we going to be done? Can we go home now? But instead, I was like, you having fun? Oh, I'm having a great time. Great. I'm happy. In the beginning, she looked at me skeptically, like, okay. I said, no. What was that? Enough already. I'm torturing you? The husbands are all like, stop! Because the wives are all thinking, this is great! I actually had the guys, it was out of Sukkot, it was at our first Sukkot, there was only like 30, 40 people there, and the men all took me off to the side saying, Rabbi, we may have to kill you. You need to stop. Don't talk about these things. At least not in front of our wives.
You may have been the one beaten and half dead on the side of the road.
Yeah. Now look, just so you guys know, I haven't been doing this for a long time, and probably that's hurt the marriage on some levels. I should be doing this again. You know? Need to get back to it. Yeah, you can clap for that. You know? I recommend all of you do it. Listen, nothing better than having, look, there's an old saying, happy wife, happy life, you know? What was that?
Happy
house. Happy spouse, happy house. Same thing. All right. So I, from the guy point of view, focus on what we need to do, right? So it's happy wife, happy life. But now, ladies, though, if the guys do this, now let me help you guys out. If the guys do this, you need to do a lot for them. Let me figure out what they need, what makes them happy. You know, reciprocate in whatever manner that actually looks like. Because remember, when I did this with her, and she didn't believe me at first, I said, no, literally, whatever you want to do, this is about you. She said, but you're not going to like that. I said, don't worry about that. Let's just do whatever you want to do. Well, ladies, do figure them out. Do whatever, figure out what the guys want. And trust me, we're easier to please. Okay, it doesn't take much. You know, we're like the puppy dog. Just kind of, you know, pat us on the head a little bit. We'll wag our tail. We'll get all excited. We don't need much. We're easy. Now that everybody's mad at me, what's next?
Okay, from Vanessa K. says, Rabbi, what is an example of how we should pray for our enemy? It seems to be such a vague thing when we say pray for them.
I did cover that indirectly if you kind of found it weaved in there. Look, we're praying because we recognize they're in pain, they're suffering, there's something wrong in their lives, which is why they're acting the way they are. So ask Abba to show them, to help them, to lead them in a path that will heal that. They're acting as an enemy for one of two reasons. Either because you deserve it, in which case you need to work on you, or because you're being wrongfully attacked, which means there's something going on with them. So pray, Abba, help them deal with whatever it's in them that's causing them to act this way. There's something underlying that behavioral pattern. Next question.
Okay, from Marvin says, if you have a brother that is full of hate towards you, even if you try to make peace with them, is it not better to just avoid them?
Look, it's not, this whole thing with the Samaritan thing is not about never avoiding anybody, okay? This is about expressing love to someone who has no, you have nothing negative with, there's nothing against you, there's nothing you against them, but they need somebody. Now, if you have a problem with somebody, it may not be safe either physically or emotionally for you to interact with them, then you may need to avoid them. There are toxic people out there that are toxic to you in your life, and you may need to create distance between you and the toxicity. boundaries. And so there's nothing in Scripture against setting boundaries. Matter of fact, there's lots of places in Scripture where the metaphor is played out where Yahweh sets a boundary and tells people, you cannot go across here. Only certain people can go across that boundary at certain times. Whether it's in the tabernacle, whether it's on Mount Sinai, there are boundaries that are set. Okay? We're told not to move our brother's boundary. You don't get to move the boundary line. They set it. Okay? All right, next.
Okay, from Leanne. It says, often in Psalms we read David praying for the punishment of his enemies. Is this correct given the fullness instructed by Yeshua to love our enemies?
Look, it would have to be in the context in the psalm. You know, David was struggling and trying to process his emotions, and he did it through songs. Okay? And as he processed, if you read, he would almost always say things about his enemies and then talk about his struggle. Say something about his enemy and then talk about his struggle. My enemies are all around me and they're persecuting me. You know, have them reap what they sow and everything else. Says, Abba, I seek you day and night and I, you know, I pine away for your judgments and I, you know, I'm struggling. Okay, I'm struggling. So Yeshua is just giving us clarity of instruction and taking it to a higher level. And in David's case, most of them probably were real enemies. He was king. There were other nations around. And if you're king, even those in your nation may treat you like enemy. Some of his own children treated him like enemy. Next.
From Vanessa K., could praying for our enemies be more for us than for our enemies?
Absolutely. Everything is for you first. Praying for your enemies is for you first. Forgiveness is for you first. All these things are about you first. So when you pray for your enemies, your thoughts are completely different. Your emotions are different. The bitterness isn't there. The anger isn't there. The hurt isn't there. There's a forgiveness that's there. I'm praying for them, which means I have to feel in a compassionate way, in a optimistic way for them, a caring way, as opposed to a angered, hate, you know, hate-filled, bitter, whatever negative emotions you want to add to that. Next.
From Michelle Perez, is it correct to say that we are only responsible for things we have control of and don't react to things out of our control?
This is one of the hardest things that I think we have to get a hold of, is to recognize what you have control over and what you don't. And, you know, it's almost like the serenity prayer that a lot of people know about, you know, recognizing what you can do, what you can't do, and knowing the difference between what God can do and what you have to do, that whole serenity prayer. That's a beautiful prayer to understand. You've got to recognize what you can do, what you should do, what you must do, and what you can't do, and what you shouldn't do, and what he's got to do. And that takes, again, that space between things that are happening and your reaction to them or response to them to think about, is this something that's mine? Is this something I should be leaving alone? Is this something that's his? Be careful and identify who should own the thing. Because boundary lines get crossed all the time when you own something you shouldn't own. If you're a spouse, you can own your husband's or your wife's stuff. It's really not your stuff, it's their stuff. Same thing with your kids. I have parents all the time, and look, you guys, I get it, and I made a joke about it, I think, last week or the week before, you know, we were talking during the Q&A or maybe during the last teaching, but, you know, where the parents are calling me up and they're owning the struggles of their children. I say, well, how old are they? They're like 40, 35. I was like, why are you owning this? It's their problem, but it's my baby boy. And he's got his own wife and kids and divorces and whatever else he's dealing with. You can still have compassion. You can still maybe offer advice, but don't own it. But you're all angry and hurt and frustrated because you're owning it. Nothing you can do. None of you as adults are going to go make another adult do anything. Now, maybe a spouse with a spouse somewhat, but if you're an adult with an adult child who lives outside your house with their own life, you've got nothing you can do to make them do anything. All you're going to do is, quote unquote, make them upset, which you're really not doing. They're choosing to be. But you understand what I'm saying? You can't make them do anything. You got to recognize your limited authority and your limited effectiveness and what's yours and what's not yours. Okay, next.
OK, Okay, from Candace Madewell, when we find ourselves in a situation involving intentional abuse or being victimized in some way, how do we strike a balance between loving our enemies and setting and enforcing proper boundaries?
Okay, those two things again, okay, same thing for Candace, same thing for all of you. The only reason you're confused is because there's emotional problems here. In other words, there's an emotion connected. If you're in abuse, you need to get out of the abuse. Once you're out of the abuse, you can now love that person at a distance. Create the boundary first. If you're in real abuse, by the way, there are a lot of people that are not in real abuse. They just feel like they're abused. That's fine. Feeling abused is enough for you to create some boundaries. Create the boundaries. Love them from the other side of the boundary. First thing is be safe. All right. So you feel like you're being abused. Maybe you're really being abused. If it's emotional and verbal, be more ready to get counsel. It may or may not be. If it's physical, it's physical. Less confusion with physical abuse than with quote-unquote emotional abuse. Some of you are feeling emotionally abused when maybe half the problem is that you're incredibly emotionally fragile. And you're fragile for lots of reasons. It could be because of real abuses that happened earlier, and now you're fragile to anything that is challenging. So you're saying, well, my husband's abusive or my wife's abusive. Tell me more about that. Because they may or may not be. But that doesn't change the fact that you believe it is and feels like it is to you. And that's real. And that's what we have to talk about when we're dealing with challenges and counseling with people, is to recognize your reality, even if it's not reality, is still your reality. And so the husband or the wife is thinking, I'm not abusing them. And the other one's like, but yes, you are. And I have to say, look, to them, it's real. You need to first accept that they believe and feel abused. It doesn't matter that literally, technically, it's abuse or not. They feel that way. All right, so you should be working on that. You don't want them to feel abused, do you? Well, she's just too sensitive. Oh, he's just too sensitive. That might be true. We can work on that also. But in this current state that they're in, it feels like abuse. And so they're responding as you would respond to abuse. So yes, you must create boundaries first, Candace, and then you must, after you have your boundaries, and those boundaries may be within the home, or maybe needing to get separated outside of the home. Depends on where the boundary needs to be drawn. You may need counsel to figure out how to do that. But then you love them. Why? Because do you want them to stay in a place that they could do that? Would you want anybody to stay in a condition that would allow them to treat people the way that person's treating you? If you think they're wrong and you think it's the wrong way to treat people, clearly there must be something wrong with them, because a person who doesn't have anything wrong with them wouldn't treat you that way, right? You would never treat anybody unless in a loving, shalom-filled way if there was nothing wrong with you. All of you are screwed up. All of you have stuff wrong with you. All of you are broken and damaged. All of us, including me. Otherwise, we would treat everybody wonderfully. So that's why we pray for them. Stop thinking they're doing it because you're so messed up. Well, it must be my fault, or he wouldn't do that, or she wouldn't do that. No. There's no excuse that makes it the other person's fault. Remember, you're not making them mad. You're not making them frustrated. You're not making them anything. They're choosing to respond that way. And so, no, you never deserve that. Problem is, we don't know how to do the other. We have no practice. It's very hard. You get triggered, and when you get triggered, you're no longer thinking how I can be nice to the person, or how I can speak in a nice tone of voice, or how I can feel compassion for the fact that they're screaming in pain right now, which is why they're lashing out like they are. The more lashing out, the more in pain they are. That's their pain screaming out of their body. Whether it's crying, screaming, having a meltdown, or physically throwing things around the room, they are screaming, I am in pain. And I want the pain to stop. And I'm targeting you as the source of my pain. And you should sit there going, oh my goodness. I got to do something to help that person be in less pain. No, instead you whack them back and cause the pain to increase. Because you feel like you are wrongly being accused, or you get defensive. Well, I was just defending myself. If you've ever said that, why are you defending yourself? What's there to defend? Either you were right or you were wrong. Doesn't matter if I think you're right or wrong. If you're right or wrong, why do you have to defend yourself? Well, but you thought I was wrong and I didn't do it. Okay, right now I'm just screaming in pain. Why don't we calm that down first? But you need to recognize also that when you're screaming in pain, that you're screaming in pain. It's not so much what the other person has did. And you're all mad at them and you drive me crazy and you doesn't. You should be thinking, wow, I can't believe the level of pain I'm in right now. And stop thinking the cause is the other person. If you didn't have it there to trigger, there wouldn't be that response. It'd just be somebody acting like a jerk or foolish or whatever they were acting. Well, so what? No reason for you to react in a pain level, except that you don't have the capacity, the experience, and the practice of reacting differently. Does anybody make this is making any sense to anybody? Okay? Now, what I'm talking about makes sense and is simple in the intellectual. It is brutally hard in the physical because we don't have that thought in that moment. In that moment, we're just full functional pain. We're voicing pain, we're feeling pain, we're emotionally in pain. We're miserable. And if you love somebody, how could you want to see them be miserable? Well, because they're making me miserable. No, they're not. They're just lashing out in pain. And that pain could be from somebody else. My father used to come home from work and lash out at everybody because he was miserable from what happened at work. Nothing we did. He just hated his job so much. So he came home and took it out on everybody. And so, but it was pain speaking. And you can't argue with pain. You got to soothe pain. And go over to the person in pain and say, I'm so sorry that you're in so much pain and I don't want to be contributing to that. And so let's just figure out a way to fix that for right now. This thing that we're dealing with, let's put that aside for a minute and just let's shut down the pain. Maybe walk over, talk softer, give them a hug or something to say, I'm so sorry that there's so much pain right now. And I'm sorry that you see me as the source of it. Don't correct them and say it's your choice. Just say, I'm sorry that right now you see me as the source of it. I don't want to be the source of your pain. So until let's work on the calming that down before we try to figure out what to do with what caused all this. Now bear in mind, I'm not good at any of what I just said. I just want to make clear in case you're thinking, oh, Rabbi, how do you do that? I have no idea. Because I don't do that. And my wife's sitting there going, man, if he would just do that, man, that'd be so perfect. Is he even listening to himself? I'm listening. I know how hard it is to do these things, but I at least he's giving me the words to articulate what we need to do. We've got to take the bandages, like on the Samaritan, bandage up the wounds, and make sure the person feels safe before we deal with the problem or the perceived problem. But they're wrong. But right now, they're just in pain. Who cares who's right or who's wrong right now? All right, I think that's going to be enough right there.